The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined in studio by Natasha O'Brien. You know Natasha O'Brien because of all the things she has been through: our judicial an attack, our judicial system, an appeal, and finally vindication. But it wasn't over even after that, as I learned when I watched the documentary, which is going to be airing on Wednesday night. Wednesday tomorrow night, but I got a sneak preview. It's called Simply Natasha. Mm-hmm. And that Natasha, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you so much for having me in this morning.
You might bring us back to the original awful night mm-hmm. when you, being a good citizen, intervened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I have told my story many times.
We'll do a short
it is,
version.
It absolutely is important to just kind of get back to it again. So I suppose I was walking home from work in Limerick City on a Saturday night back in April 2022, and it was myself and my friend together when we noticed a group of boys in front of us, and they were aggressively shouting homophobic slurs across the road at this lone male that was walking by himself. And it was just, it was a mere impulse path to me just to, I wasn't thinking, I just simply said, ah lads, leave him alone.
It was just kind of harmless enough in itself.
Harmless, natural. I just, there was this sense of danger, there was a sense of this male, this young male by himself is a target. And
you know, there are ads going out encouraging people not to tolerate that kind of talk.
Absolutely, and it shouldn't be tolerated, absolutely not. So, you know, we just, I didn't think too much of it. Nobody looked too threatening. I just saw these five young males about to, you know, set upon this young guy by himself. And I just feared for his safety, really. And just kind of, just I suppose in the heat of the moment thought, oh, let's try to de-escalate the situation quickly before anyone gets harmed.
Instead, and there was really rapid escalation and you were the target.
There was rapid escalation. And yeah, I was the target. One of the males in that group just approached me, and before, like, it was just a split second, really, before I knew it, he was grabbing onto my hair, punching me repeatedly, right hook after right hook into the face. And then at, I think maybe after around six full force punches, I hit the concrete, where he then continued to punch me on the ground. I curled up into the fetal position, screaming, please stop. And I could hear my friend in the, background just screaming help. And that's when I began to lose consciousness, and the punches kept coming, the blows kept coming. He was not stopping. And I was just thinking, I just thought to myself, lying on the ground, like, this is it, Natasha, this is it.
Now, I saw pictures on the documentary when I watched it last night of your injuries. Mm. I mean, you were battered.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I was battered. My nose was fractured. It was all halfway across my face. My eye was closed up, my eye socket, my jaw. I had lumps and bumps on my head. And then,
and of course, the danger potentially of a brain bleed, which is something you'd worry about. Now, the quest to find your assailant was very interesting because, I mean, you're of the social media generation.
I am.
And it became actually quite important.
It did. And, you know, this just shows the power and value of social media, because, you know, while I didn't recognise any of these males, my friend that was with me recognised one of the males in that group.
And that was the beginning of a link to a chain.
That was the beginning. So it was, we spent weeks, we went into this individual's profiles, we went into all his tagged photos, we went into all his friends, we went into all their friends, their tagged photos, and kept going systematically looking for anyone that might have resembled my attacker. And that's when we came across a group photo with my attacker in the middle, smiling.
And you show this photograph blanking out the other faces, mm-hmm. but these are army boys mm-hmm. in a row, and he is there right in the heart of them. Now, before we carry on with the next phase of your adventure, or misadventure, I suppose, we have to talk about the kind of person you were before this.
Yes, yes.
So what were you doing? What was your job, or jobs, plural?
Jobs, plural. Yeah, no. So I was working for a couple of businesses, including a student bar where I was working in events management and social media coordination. So I was, you know, running those accounts. And so the night in question, I was in for some event that was on, taking some photographs for a couple of hours. And that's, you know, and then, you know, I was leaving work after finishing my photographs, and that's when it all happened. But, you know, it just turned everything. I just lost my, after that happened, I just lost my will to kind of, especially going in the job I was in, where I was having to be very social and, you know, be on site taking lots of, you know, event management. I couldn't do it. I couldn't face people. When in crowds, I was searching for his face. And so that just really fell apart for me.
Now, it took ages before an actual trial. And this is one of maybe justice delayed is justice denied, they always say. Mm-hmm. And that is a torment for someone like you who is the victim. But of course, as a victim, you can, you're kind of almost in some ways just an observer of what happens in the situation.
This is actually something that I talk about a lot. So essentially, you know, when you become the victim of a violent assault, an attack of any sort, whether that's, you know, a physical assault like mine, you know, like what happened to me, whether that's domestic abuse, whether that's sexual abuse, you know, your power is taken away from you. Your power is taken away from you in that moment. You have no power.
You're a witness.
And then when you're reporting, because when you're reporting it and going in and giving your evidence to the guards, then all of your, everything that's happened to you is being used as evidence. And so, again, your power is taken away. You don't know what's happening. You don't have a say.
And even when you have to give a victim impact statement, you don't give it at the accused. You don't turn to the accused and say, you did this to me. You turn to the judge and you explain to the judge the impact. Mm. And you'd much prefer, I suppose, to point the finger and...
And I suppose, I suppose when I was filming the documentary that we will talk about, you know, there's, you know, that it kind of is unraveled that, you know, it's something that a lot of people going into the system don't realise until maybe a week or two or when they're in it, that you can only address the judge. And that's something also that I explore restorative justice, because that is that opportunity to actually address the individual that caused you harm.
But you were not offered restorative.
But I was not. And most aren't. In Ireland, they're not. But
now, the scandal that got people going was when Justice O'Donnell decided to give a suspended sentence to Cathal Crotty.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, a lot of the documentary is you and your mum. Mm-hmm. And you have quite a combative relationship, shall I say.
You're putting it lightly there, Pat.
No, but you describe her, and it's very funny at one point, you talk the kind of woman she is. If there's a line of traffic, she doesn't care. She goes out in the other lane and off she goes, waving at them as she passes.
Oh, mortified.
That's the kind of person.
She'd have me hiding in the glove box, honestly. Like, you know, and even this, it's even like if we're going to a restaurant and there's a wait to be seated. No. She sees that table. She's going down. It has a reserve sign on it. The reserved is coming off. Mortifying. She just plays by her own rules. And I suppose I've grown up under her shadow. And so, you know,
so you've learned a lot from her.
I think I've learned. And while I hate to agree that, oh, I'm just like my mom, I don't think the apple falls far from the tree, because I do have my own sense of values that... I won't compromise, regardless of the rules and the laws.
Now, you have this discussion with her and she's trying to say, look, the judge is only doing the law, da-da-da-da. And you're saying, no, that the law is the law. It doesn't matter who's kind of interpreting it. Mm. And you have that discussion, which I found quite interesting. Now, that judge is retired.
Yes.
But the battle then, I mean, what happened as a result of that suspended sentence and the public uproar that it caused, which led to the DPP ultimately appealing the sentence. But the extraordinary thing was that you did not learn about that from the DPP's office.
No. I was, I suppose, that, you know, there was all this public uproar, and going back to the original sentencing, what really felt like the most frustrating and just what felt like the true injustice was the reasons given for this sentencing, that, you know, the justice, the sentencing judge explained that if I give this individual a custodial sentence, then he will lose his job in the Irish Defence Forces. And for me, that was like, you know, I had read my victim impact statement. I explained about how
I've lost
everything. I've had to move back home to my mother's house at 23, 24. I'm now on illness benefit because I'm too unwell to work. You know, my boss has lost a great employee. The taxpayer is losing money paying for my illness benefit because I'm so unwell. And this is all as a result of this individual's actions. Yet you're trying to save his job. That's not justice. And so that kind of sparked that public outcry that, you know, this is a peacekeeping force. Why are we trying to protect a job when they're showing a track record of not being peaceful, you know, to civilians?
Now, the pressure's going to court. And I found all of this kind of detail very interesting because, I mean, your narrative is well known, but it's the kind of insight you give us.
It's
you
insight.
Go to court the first time and you want to dress ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And these are, in the documentary, you know, it kind of does explore those discrepancies that we don't see. You know, we just see that victim in that headline. You know, we don't see all the little mundane things. What colour lipstick will I wear? Is this dress too short? Stupid things that you don't actually realise.
And when you go in for the appeal, you have this new dress that you bought in Penny's or whatever it might be. And it's only when you go out the door leaving your mother behind, you say, oh my God, I didn't realise how short this dress was.
Yeah, because
you don't want to give the wrong impression in the court.
Absolutely, no, because I suppose...
Which is stupid, because
Stupid, yeah. But yeah, going into court 12 months ago, I was looking for the ugliest clothes, and you can see this in the documentary that, you know, I'm putting on this ugly grey jumper, trying to be unflattering, trying to make myself look small, because even though I can present like I'm here and I'm talking and I'm confident, that doesn't mean I'm not struggling on the inside and I'm not affected. But I didn't want the judge to see me as someone that hadn't been impacted. So I tried to make myself look small. And then in the contrast that you see in the documentary, you know, I'm getting ready to go into the appeal in January and I'm wearing a dress and I'm putting on the lipstick and, you know, and my mom is saying, oh, do you not think that red lipstick, it's a bit too much for court? And I'm saying, Mom, you know, I'm a human being and, you know, I don't wear this trauma on the outside. And so
you also know that you're going to be seen on camera.
Yeah.
You know that. So you want to put your best foot forward.
But I also think that, like, you know, we expect in society, we expect a victim to look wounded. We expect a victim to look beaten down. And while, I was beaten down on the inside, I didn't want to have to wear that. You know, I wanted to wear me and be myself. And I like red lipstick. So I wasn't going to, I learned that I'm not going to try to shrink myself just so that someone views me as the victim. I am a victim, but I'm also a person.
Now, people might know of your interviews and so on, but they may not be as aware of your activism that followed. I mean, you went to give talks all over the place and, you know, you met with Ivana Bacik, the leader of the Labour Party, and she made references to your case when you were actually in Dáil Éireann. You got a round of applause from the standing TDs. They all stood up and welcomed you. That must have been a very changing experience for you as a person, that kind of activism.
I suppose I remember when I reflect back to that standing ovation, it was my first time ever in Leinster House. It was a week after the you know, my attacker walking free with a suspended sentence. And I went into Dáil Éireann to meet with some politicians. And, you know, I was sitting up in the gallery and, you know, I was given a standing ovation. And it was like, you know, I was grateful for that recognition. But at the same time, it was also really frustrating because I felt like I shouldn't have to be here. Nobody should have to know my name. And you absolutely shouldn't have to be standing up here clapping. Because if the government had ensured, you know, the well-being of victims in the justice system and was, you know, creating a process that supported victims, I wouldn't need to be here. You wouldn't need to be standing up here clapping. You're doing this because you haven't performed and you haven't, you know, given, you know.
Now that, with that activism and that public face, people got to know you. And you have a very interesting section in the documentary where you talk with two other victims of violence, domestic violence and rape. And one of them says that, you know, you're happy to be identified. That's what they both did.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to be identified when you're buying bananas in the supermarket. There's a time and a place for that kind of identification.
Because myself and Blanid and Maeve are the two women that I met, and we've all been through the justice system. We've all been through different experiences, had different, you know, crimes, I suppose. But we had so much in common, and it was a really, like, really powerful moment for us, the three of us, to come together. Three survivors that have put ourselves out there in the public eye and shared our stories and kind of talking about the impact of that, and how, you know, you're in the shop buying a pint of milk and someone's like, oh, you're that girl. And, you know, and it's like, you know, but we did this for a reason, because we want to empower others and we don't want anyone to feel alone. And I think when I watched the film back last week for the first time, it was so emotional, because I just really felt like if I had been able to watch this when I didn't know what was ahead of me, I would have felt so seen and validated. And it really made me emotional to watch it back and really see that this is going to be so validating and so empowering for people. And even if you don't, if you can't relate, you haven't been a victim of trauma, you haven't been a victim of gender-based violence, but you are struggling in your life with trauma, with grief, with something, there's so many parts of this film that you will be able to relate to, because it kind of explores the complexity of trauma too, and how those kind of aftershocks.
Now, one of the complexities is your feeling, and you talk about this with your therapist, which is a short segment mm-hmm. of which is included in the documentary, about how you felt guilty that Cathal Crotty was being jailed for 2 years. Mm. That is, like, it's your fault that he was, yeah. Which, you know, most people say that's crazy.
That was a really difficult, complex feeling I had, Pat, because I suppose I had lost all faith in the justice system after being so neglected in that initial sentence. So, you know, when I was preparing to go to the appeal hearing, I had no hopes. You know, my expectations, I kept them as low as I possibly could. So I didn't even think to prepare myself for if the sentence was overturned and there was a new sentence given. And so when I was sitting there and, you know, for the first time, these appeal judges were acknowledging, you know, what I had been through and, you know, everything that the initial justice didn't. You know, they were saying...
The key thing was that until he was confronted with CCTV
yes.
evidence, he was not pleading guilty.
And that was given as evidence in the first sentencing, but yet that wasn't acknowledged. And, you know, these are really important things. Like, you know, he lied. He said that I attacked him. When he was given the CCTV evidence, he then changed his story and signed a guilty plea. He also was boasting and bragging about it on social media the next day, two to put her out. Also, he didn't stop beating me. A passerby intervened and pulled him off me. I was lifeless on the ground and he was still relentlessly beating me. So, you know, and that the judge that day in that appeal court acknowledged that and said Natasha's injuries could have been fatal if it were not for that passerby that stopped, you know, and that's a reality that the initial judge didn't even acknowledge. And so to hear all that, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I must be dreaming, because this is something that I only ever thought would happen in a dream. But then to see them hand down the sentence and see his family, and, you know, it didn't feel good. And while people were congratulating me and happy and celebrating, oh, you've finally gotten this justice, I felt like, you know, I'm not a vengeful person. And just because you hurt me, it doesn't mean I want to hurt you. You know, I don't want to hurt anyone. And just because he hurt me doesn't mean I want to see him hurt. And,
but
you
that's
know,
where restorative so justice
and
might
that's
have
restorative
come
restorative justice. And so now I feel another injustice has been done, that I wasn't offered that. And also that he wasn't offered that, because I really do feel like, you know, yes, I am the primary victim in this case, but my attacker, has become a secondary victim, because had justice been served correctly the first time, nobody would know his name or face. Nobody would know my name or face. He would have an opportunity to redeem, to learn, to, you know, move on. And now the whole country knows his name and face. And I don't feel good about that. You know, and I always try not to make it, because it's not about me and him. It's about, I've always been speaking up about victims and the justice system, but he got caught in the crossfire. And that breaks my heart, that this young boy who had a life ahead of him has been caught in this crossfire and marked by this.
Now, you saw the documentary yourself a couple of weeks ago.
I did.
Has your mum seen it?
She saw it. She has. She watched it last week. Oh,
what
my goodness.
What was her reaction?
She came up to me. So the documentary is called Natasha. And she came up to me and afterwards and she said, Natasha, they should have called it my poor old ma. Honestly, I'm just the like backup in this, like it's the Anne show really. Like everyone that has watched it comes up to me going, they're just all they care about is my mammy. They're like, oh, your mom, she's gas, she's brilliant, don't she? And I'm like, okay, thank you. Like she is just, she's stolen the show, she has.
Well, the documentary, people can watch it tomorrow on 9:35 on RT1 and on the RT player.
Yes.
But for you, what's next?
Well, you know, I really, really feel like I'm so proud of this work. It took me 10 months to put it together. You know, Elaine Stenson came up to me last summer and wanted to talk to me about a potential film project. And I just said, I have to grab this and I have to use this and show everyone in Ireland what we don't know and what I have learned through my experience. And I feel like I've only skimmed the surface. So there's, you know, we touched on restorative justice in the documentary. I meet with criminologist Dr. Ian Murder. But I really want to explore that more because I think it's really worthwhile opening up that more and, you know, looking into how we can use that to help us.
Well, if you've been impacted by anything we've been talking about in this interview, you can contact the Samaritans National Helpline on 116 123 or the Safe Ireland Helpline on 1800 341 900. And Natasha O'Brien, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.